So what was the crucial thing in bringing down this regime? Was it sanctions? Was it ECOMOG? Was it diplomacy? What was it?
I think it was a combination of various things. It was a combination of the continuing dialogue. It was a continuation, partly the sanctions, but undoubtedly it was also the force as well. As we found out on many, many occasions, they were not going to stand down voluntarily. Certainly not the IUF were not going to allow the junta to stand down. And it required also the force as well, the force which was provided by ECOMOG, in particular the Nigerian forces. But that had to be also backed up by the sort of strong international community position, and it had to be clearly backed up by the views of the Sierra Leone people. So you had all the right ingredients to ensure that it took place. And these were very specific ingredients to the Sierra Leone situation. And I come back to this point again. I'm not saying that, therefore, to resolve the problem, say, in northern Uganda now or in Ethiopia or in Congo, you can just use the blueprint of Sierra Leone. But there was one clear message that we were sending out, and which we hoped would be sending a message for the whole of Africa. I mean, when we were in Conakry, it was not just a question of restoring the legitimate government to Sierra Leone. We were trying to send a message for the whole of Africa that this would be the last military coup in Africa. That if any other bunch of soldiers suddenly decided one morning to get up and overthrow their legitimate government, they would get the same reaction, hopefully from their own people and from the international community. And when we did actually restore President Kabba's government in March of 98, those of us who had been involved felt we'd done something as a contribution to the future peace and democracy of Africa.
Have you?
I think we had for a while. Sadly, the next coup that came along was just in neighbouring Ivory Coast, and I'm afraid there we slid back again, because then we went back to the old system of coming to these bunch of soldiers and saying, oh, you naughty boys, you shouldn't have done that. Now, when are you going to have your democratic elections? And I think as a result of that, particularly in Ivory Coast's case, we've now seen that country plunge from one crisis to another.
Maggie, I know this is a slight exaggeration, but what Peter seems to be saying is if it was left to you and you'd put in food aid and things, the junta might still be there today. You would be responsible for keeping alive a ruthless military regime.
Well, I think that is quite a large exaggeration, because actually I think the things that Peter is saying about the international pressure on the junta and the fact that it was pretty much universally condemned, I think are all really important points. And I mean, at no point were we taking issue with any of that. It wasn't our position to.
Have prolonged this junta's life.
No, that's where I disagree, because the whole point is in providing humanitarian assistance in a very targeted way and minimal humanitarian assistance. We weren't talking about, you know, enormous shiploads of humanitarian assistance pouring in and kind of allowing that to be grabbed by the military. What we were talking about was looking at projects on a case-by-case basis. And, I mean, we completely understood that whichever donor, whether it was the UK government or any other donor, they would want to be reassured that that assistance was going to get to the people who are most in need. But we felt that at least projects should have been looked at on a case-by-case basis. Who were the people in need? How could we most ensure we were going to reach them? And if that had been the position that was taken, then I don't think you could possibly claim that humanitarian assistance would have shored up the regime.
Don't aid agencies also have a duty to think in wider terms? You need to think not just about providing food for the hungry, but you also need to think in terms of peace, democracy, these kind of issues.
Absolutely. And in that sense, I think one of the real areas of progress in humanitarian work is that I think most agencies working in places like Sierra Leone are actually investing much more in their own kind of political analysis, so that whatever they're doing that with a much stronger and more sophisticated contextual analysis. But I would still come back to the point that if you go back to the Geneva Conventions and the principles of humanitarianism, then do what you do in a politically informed way, but provide that aid impartially and do not withhold it for political reasons.
But what about the argument that the best way to reduce people's suffering in Sierra Leone was to just get rid of this regime as quickly as possible and by any means?
Again, I come back to the principles of humanitarianism, because as soon as you start entering into those kinds of calculations, I mean, they're very tricky calculations to make. And you know, sort of like how many lives do we sacrifice in order to get a better solution in the long term? But I'd just like to make one other point around humanitarian principles. One of the reasons why humanitarian agencies talk so much about these principles of impartiality and humanity is because the best way of them gaining access to the people in need is to be saying to whoever it is waging the war, we are not interested in trying to influence the course of this war. Our commitment to you is that we're working on the basis of impartiality and we're just trying to reach the people who need that assistance. It may sound very simplistic, but it's actually a critical point in terms of gaining access to people in need in the middle of a war. And I think that once agencies stop working to those principles, then their chances of reaching people in need are, I mean, you might as well forget it. They're just not going to be able to do it.
Peter, the last word from you.
When you talk about sort of Geneva Convention, the important thing about Geneva Convention is the protection of people's human rights and to prevent human atrocities. We had a situation in Sierra Leone where people were being brutally murdered, their arms and legs were being hacked off, the women were being raped, the children were being kidnapped, their homes were being destroyed, the city was being destroyed, the government's infrastructure was collapsed, there was no police, there was no law and order. These were the things that had to be corrected. People were not complaining that they didn't have enough to eat. They were complaining about all those awful things. And we had to have a commitment to ensure that that was removed and the democratic government was back. There was no people dying of mass hunger, and therefore we didn't want to do anything which could be in any way contribute towards keeping the suffering of that people going on longer than it did.
There we are. Two views. Nobody's changed their view. But thank you very much indeed for joining me in this programme. Margie Buchanan-Smith, Peter Penfold, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.